Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Only Movie Podcast. I'm your A-host, Dan Leo, and with me, as always, is my dutiful steed.
Yeah, I'm the horse, also known as Robert Mecki, and I've got a need for Creed.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so we're starting it off with that.
Yeah, well, go ahead. You can describe what exactly we're going to be doing in this podcast, Robert.
This episode is a packed episode. We got a high news. We got a low news for you. We got a toss up. It's going to be an interesting discussion. And we also got a review of Ralph Breaks the Internet and Creed 2, because it was a packed Thanksgiving week, ladies and gentlemen.
The biggest on record, right? It was the biggest Thanksgiving box office on record.
I think second biggest. I'm pretty sure it was the second biggest, but it's up there.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let's get right into the box office to show you how much money everything made. You got Ralph Breaks the Internet, which broke the box office. Broom, bazinga. Ha ha, hilarious. Look at me go. Made $56 million just in America. And then the total gross is $84 million. The budget is $175 million. I imagine all of that is product placement.
Yeah.
And then Creed 2 coming in at number 2. Classic with $35 million total gross worldwide, $56 million, making up its budget of $50 million, and then Dr. Seuss, the blah blah blah, $30 million, blah blah blah, total gross $180 million on a budget of $75 million. So expect 17 Dr. Seuss animated movies with spinoffs.
This one had Tyler the Creator doing the soundtrack, though, so at least we got that out of it.
Yeah, exactly. There are worse things that happen in the world every day.
Yeah.
I just can't name that many of them.
Okay, I do want to point something out, though, with these box office numbers real quick. One of the criticisms I've always had of Illumination Entertainment, and I think that if you do any cursory research on Illumination, you'll see that...
Which I haven't.
There's a shit ton of complaints that they underpay all of their employees, and I believe it because their budget... They have yet to make an animated film that has a budget over $100 million, and that's not very common. Like, animated films generally have pretty high budgets just because you need such a large workforce working constantly to produce something like that. And just look at Ralph Breaks the Internet. That's $100 million more production wise than The Grinch.
Yeah. And I haven't seen The Grinch, but I can't say for sure that Ralph Breaks the Internet is $100 million more better animation. Has $100 million worth of what?
Probably not. I do think it's probably written better. I'm just going by the reviews because I haven't seen Dr. Seuss's The Grinch yet either.
Yeah, what do they need to write? I mean, it's already written.
Totally. I will say, though, I bet you everybody working at Disney is way happier than everybody working at Illumination Entertainment.
Yeah, I mean, I assume so because they work at Disney. So
yeah, and they also don't have to deal with, like, I bet you one of the initiation rites at Illumination is like getting a Minion tattoo. I feel like,
oh god, yeah,
they force all their staff to get a Minion tattoo right at some point. Ass. Yeah.
So I mean, I don't really care about these box office numbers. I mean, Ralph Breaks the Internet, that's a decent amount. There is really like three good box office, like any other weekend, all three of these would be number one.
Yeah,
most of the time. I mean, Creed 2, 35, you know, that's what I think. Crazy Rich Asians had less than that, and that was a huge hit. Dr. Seuss the Grinch, like 30 million, that's still pretty big for like a bad weekend. That could definitely be number one, and this is what, its third week.
Yeah,
you know. And then Ralph Breaks the Internet, 56 million, that would be number one on 90% of the weeks.
You know what's crazy about this box office week, too?
What?
Fantastic Beasts, not even in the top three.
Oh, yeah. Big what a drop off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where did it drop to? That's actually interesting. I have it up right now, so don't even worry about it.
Yeah. Either four or five.
Yeah, four. But it really just, it came under like a million below The Grinch.
Yeah. That's
29 million.
Huge percentage drop.
Right. 52.7% drop. That is pretty substantial, and it's this could like
people
not even
don't like this movie. Like I'm what I'm really hoping is that, you know, Warner Brothers sees this reaction and they like force J.K. Rowling either out of the writing position. Like, she, I think she should still consult because it's her universe, but
yeah,
get some new screenwriters, man. Get people that actually know what they're doing in terms of, you know, screenwriting and writing non-pros.
Yeah, because all of the components are there for something good, just not the script.
Yeah.
So that is interesting. Yeah, 52.7. This is $116 million on a budget of $200 million, not counting marketing, which I imagine is probably huge. So I don't, this is flopping pretty hard.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, it's funny to say that it's flopping considering how much money it's still making. But again, for a Harry Potter film, that's pretty, I mean, that's not good.
Yeah, definitely not. I'd be watching that pretty carefully.
Yeah. So the question now is, how long before they bring J.J. Abrams in?
Oh, shut up. I hope never. I don't even want that.
I would be legitimately down for a J.J. Abrams Harry Potter film. I think that would be pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think that'd be pretty interesting, too. I don't need enough lens flare. I already have that.
There's a lens flare spell. Just wait for it.
But they cast at the beginning of every single movie.
Yeah.
Like, Activatus Lens Flaris.
And they're going to bring in Benedict Cumberbatch and reveal that he's Khan the whole time.
Oh, God. Yeah. And no matter how hard they try to convince us otherwise, let's go right into the highs and lows and toss-ups of the week. Do we want to start with the highs or the lows?
Yeah, let's start with the highs.
Yeah. Well, all right. It's a pretty scant week. So we've got Donald Glover and Rihanna to star in a new movie called Guava Island. And this is a leaked trailer. You can go find it on YouTube. It is filmed on an iPhone from like a million miles away. Mm-hmm. So you can barely tell what's going on. But it looks like it's set in the Caribbean. It's starring Donald Glover and Rihanna. And Letitia Wright is also in it. You might remind her, she plays Suri in Black Panther. So pretty good cast right off the bat. And there's something, it looks kind of like and it's directed by Hiro Murai from This Is America music video fame and also all the episodes of Atlanta, right, Robert?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it looks like it's got kind of a, what's City of God vibe almost? Like it's taking place in these like slums in this hot area. And
yeah, the super tropical area. I feel like you don't get a real good sense of the plot from the trailer, but what I gathered from the dialogue, it sounds like, you know, one of the lines that stuck out to me is like, we're living in paradise, but nobody can afford to actually live here. So yeah. I'm guessing that it's going to end up becoming like either some sort of heist or some sort of like crime movie.
Yeah.
And I think like it definitely seems a lot more lighthearted than City of God from the trailer.
Oh yeah, definitely.
But yeah, I am hyped for this. I cannot like, I feel like everybody's been saying it for a while. Like Hiro Murai should be directing feature films at this point.
100% agree. He is super talented. His style, I love what he's done with Atlanta. He really takes the shape of that show and gives it its aesthetic. And you can say, you know, I think Donald Glover is an okay actor. I think everyone else in that show is really good. But I think Hiro Murai is really able to shift tones and meet what the script has in store for it each and every episode.
Yeah.
It's cool that a show that is almost what the show has going for it is the amount of styles that it can cohesively weave together in these long storylines. And I think that has a lot to do with Hiro Murai. It's very similar to Maniac in that way. Although Maniac is a more extreme version of that, Maniac on Netflix, where Maniac has all of these different styles and tones going all over the place, and Carrie Joji Fukunaga is able to cohesively weave them all together. So I definitely think Hiro Murai should be directing movies, and even the style of this trailer shows it.
Yeah, I'm so into it. I think you can really tell if you watch Atlanta. I think you can tell when Hiro Murai is not directing an episode, because you really you feel his vacancy. Not to say that the episodes that he doesn't direct are bad, but I definitely think that they're lesser, and it never surprises me when I watch an episode and think like, oh, that wasn't as good as previous episodes. And then I see like directed by like Donald Glover instead of Hiro Murai.
Uh-huh.
But I also think that might just be in part like it might be because of the fact that Hiro has such a, like you said, cohesive vision, and he's directed so many episodes that it really feels like his show. And it just it feels jarring when he's not in charge of it. And those are also only like 20 something minute episodes. So yeah. I'm super curious to see what his style looks like in a much longer, in a feature length form.
Yeah, I agree. I think the end all be all. We don't have a lot of information right now, but this early, very early first look is very promising, and I'm excited to at least check it out.
Yeah. I will say, though, that the last movie I saw Rihanna acting in was Battleship.
Oh, I saw it. So you missed Valerian.
Oh, I haven't seen Valerian
in the City
yet.
Of a Thousand Planets, or a Planet of a Thousand Cities.
Is it worth watching?
The movie? No, definitely not. It is so bad.
Oh, bummer.
You know it's bad when Cara Delevingne is the best actress in it.
Yeah, that's rough.
Which, she's fine, but it's got Dane DeHaan, who it's like, it always looks like someone is casting him as a joke.
Yeah. It's just every movie that he's in just ends up becoming like, it's just a commercial at that point. Like, the only thing I think I've ever really liked him in was Chronicle.
Oh, yeah. I still haven't seen Chronicle.
Chronicle's good. You should check out Chronicle.
Yeah, it's found footage, right?
Yeah.
Am I going to get
it's
nauseous?
It's real good. No, actually, Chronicle, slight tangent. It's actually really clever on how they use, because, like, you know, one of the powers that they get are like telekinetic. So they kind of cheat with the found footage, because a lot of the scenes are just like Dane DeHaan or another character like floating the camera behind them with their telekinesis. So it looks like a Steadicam.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just like, that's kind of clever. That works.
Yeah, it looks like one. Yeah, I'll take it. Anything. My suspension of disbelief for found footage is like, oh, the camera battery lasts really long. Yeah. Oh, it looks really good. All right. Everyone knows exactly where it is all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get on to the low of the week.
Right.
And this is I think this trailer just came out today.
This morning.
And this is the Artemis Fowl, the Disney adaptation of Artemis Fowl. And if you don't know Artemis Fowl, it's a pretty big young adult novel franchise from like the mid 2000s. I think the last one came out like 2010 or 2011.
Yeah, there was like a solid five of them. I think I read three or four.
Yeah, I definitely read the first one. And I hear a lot of people say that like the first one is the most interesting, because that's Artemis Fowl, I think you could sum it up as being like the anti Breaking Bad, because Artemis Fowl starts with Artemis as a character being the antagonist of the novel, which I think is pretty novel in itself. See what I did there?
Yeah, no, funny.
I should do stand up.
Right.
That's like the general consensus online that I've been reading from all the comments and reactions to this trailer is that this is a super Disney-fied version of this story, because this is a story about like, it's about a kid. It's about a child prodigy. He's like 13 years old in the books, but he's also like a mafia boss, and like not like a Spy Kids mafia boss. Like, he like straight up poisons and kills people to get what he wants.
Like a machete mafia boss.
Yeah. And he's a sociopath.
Yeah,
in these books, but in this trailer, boy, that tone does not come off. Like, it.
They're gonna turn him into Jimmy fucking Neutron,
right? Yeah,
and I hate Jimmy Neutron.
The trailer got a blast. The trailer looks super like lighthearted and funny. They do use a Radiohead song, which is was kind of cool, but then it like fades into this like generic like trailer drum music, which was pretty lame.
Yeah.
And like the costumes look ridiculous. The kid looks ridiculous. And my biggest thing with the trailer is it ends with him like he's like turning around with sunglasses on, and like he's like fixing his tie as like the title appears behind him. And I'm just like, they're trying so hard to make it look cool. And it's just one of the cringiest things I've seen this year.
Yeah, it's like, Agent Cody Banks already came out, man. We've already seen it.
Yeah.
Like, please make something different.
And I feel real bad because, like, so, like, I read a couple of the books. I wouldn't consider myself, like, a huge Artemis Fowl fan, but there's a place for that franchise in my childhood. But I know there are fans of this franchise that have been waiting, like, literally years for this movie adaptation to come out. And I pity them because, oh, boy, this looks bad.
Yeah, it does not look very good. It looks like they're taking the route of previous young adult adaptations like Percy Jackson or Aragorn. Or there's Aragorn. What's the other one? Alex Rider.
Alex Rider. Yeah. Holy shit.
Stormbreaker, was that the name of the first?
I think so.
Book? Yeah.
Yeah.
Matt, oh man. So they've ruined a lot already.
Max Steel.
Max Steel.
Yeah.
So and that it's like Disney too. So that's like another problem that I have with this vertical integration is that everyone goes right up to the one person. And when it's Disney, they've got a very clear brand.
Mm-hmm.
And they won't let things be anything other than kid friendly, yada yada yada.
Yeah, the last edgy thing I would argue that Disney released was probably like Pirates 2 or 3, like mm-hmm. one of the original Pirates trilogies. And I think it's because, you know, they had Gore Verbinski directing, and I think Gore Verbinski yeah. is for the most part a pretty edgy and innovative director. But since then, like they've tried so many times to do. Actually, I take that back. I will say the Lone Ranger. I feel like I'm defending the Lone Ranger a little bit here because I actually enjoy that movie quite a bit, and I think that the train action sequence at the end is one of the best action sequences of the decade. But
boy. I'd love to agree with you, but nobody's seen that movie.
Yeah, that movie fucking flopped so hard. They had like a $200 yeah. million dollar budget and made like $60 million at the box office.
Poor
Armie Hammer. Not really. He's a fucking millionaire inheritor.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But I will say, check out The Lone Ranger if it's like, I don't know if it's on any streaming platforms, but I think it's worth a watch for free. It's fun. But man, this movie looks like it, like Disney failed with, you know, they had John Carter. That was a flop. Wrinkle in Time. That was a flop. They did what other like any live action movie they make that's not just a remake of one of their like golden age cartoons has flopped. And I don't see anything different happening with this film.
Disney's just bad at original properties.
Yeah. Which is so fucked. Like one of the biggest companies, if not the biggest entertainment company in the world.
That's why they're buying all these like studios. Yeah. A studio that can make great original content does not want to buy other creative properties and make those. True. Like Disney hasn't been about original works in a long time. I know we're about to review a original Disney property, but even that is heavily referential.
It's very rare yeah. for this to happen. Yeah.
Yeah. Think about like the last original Disney property that you can think of.
Yeah. And are we counting Pixar as Disney original properties? Because I think that's technically a separate studio as well. Like everything they've released is under Disney's label, but I think Pixar is like Disney doesn't own Pixar, right?
Right. I think it's one of those I think they might own Pixar, but it's one of those things where it started different and then Disney bought it.
Mm. Yeah, well, I mean it was started by Steve Jobs and George Lucas.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it was one of those things where it's like, oh, you're making good stuff. And then, you know, look at the movies before and after Disney bought it.
Yeah.
Cars 3, I don't know. I don't want to sound bitter. But this is actually a good transition.
Yeah.
Into the toss-up, which is the Lion King live action trailer, which let me start and say this movie doesn't need to exist.
Mm-mm.
It's not basically a shot for shot remake, which like they're not updating the story. They're using the same characters and they're just using a different animation style.
They're even using some of the same actors, which yeah. is hilarious. I wonder how Matthew Broderick feels about that.
That James Earl Jones gets to keep his job and Matthew Broderick doesn't.
Yeah.
Probably bad.
I wonder if he's still making a bunch of royalties from the original Lion King, though.
Oh, I bet he is.
Yeah. I bet he's got a good agent, though, that Disney kind of fucked over, you know, I mean, it's weird to say this because, like, you know, Lion King is just a remake of Hamlet.
It's not a remake of Hamlet.
It's an adaptation of Hamlet.
There is so few things in common. There's an uncle and dad, and it's royal. Like,
it's so close. It is so close.
Everyone's like, oh, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are like, no, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern betray Hamlet and die. Hamlet has them murdered.
Yeah. But this is the Disney adaptation right. of it. This is a Disney remake.
Okay, yeah. They remade Hunchback. Just keep going. What are you going to say? It's more original.
The screenwriters of the original Lion King are getting no credit for this version of Lion King, even though it's like a beat-for-beat remake.
Yeah, is it even beef? Like, the trailer was shot for shot.
Yeah.
Where it's like, hey, you want to see what Simba would look like as a lion? I'm like, yeah. I know what lions look like. Yeah. I know what animals look like.
Which, it does make me interested. I wonder if this is going to be a complete shot-for-shot remake because, you know, I'm sure the trailer was just... the opening scene of The Lion King is iconic. So I'm sure that they just... Jon Favreau shot this as just one big nostalgia bomb to get you hooked from the get-go. So I'm curious to see what the rest of the movie ends up looking like.
Yeah, I have heard there are new characters.
I hope so. But I will say, I'm excited for this simply because of the cast. Like, Donald Glover as Simba, I think, is going to be super entertaining. I'm excited to see John Oliver as Zazu. I think that's a great casting choice.
Yeah.
Seth Rogen as Pumbaa. And then who's playing Timon? Do you remember?
Isn't it Keegle, Mike, and Key?
It is. Yeah. Okay. So I think the cast is there. So I'm going to be seeing this in theaters. I'm excited to see what the cast is like. But, you know, they're saying that, this is like, it's the same guy that did The Jungle Book, which I wasn't a huge fan of, the live action 2016 Jungle Book. I was really excited for that movie because I thought the trailers were super cool. And I really liked the orchestral remixes of The Jungle Book songs. But then I sat down and watched the movie and I was like, man, this is fucking boring.
My question is, who are these movies for?
People that remember the original Lion King, but want to watch it through a new frame. You know, to me, this is like, I think Disney's done this before. Disney did this with not only The Jungle Book, but with The Force Awakens. It's a remake.
That's completely different.
No, The Force Awakens is a remake of A New Hope. Everybody knows it.
It's not the same. I'll tell you why.
Yeah, tell me why.
For a few reasons, is that it might be the same story structure, which in itself, A New Hope is the hero's journey, beat for beat. Joseph Campbell.
It's Joseph Campbell's hero's journey. Everybody, yes.
Yeah.
We all watch YouTube.
Jungle Book, the live act, it is taking the same exact characters and just using a different animation style.
But no music.
But
it's
no
trying
music?
To dramatize. Well, no musical numbers. It's trying to dramatize the Jungle Book story. I feel like you could probably make the argument that the live action Jungle Book is closer to the source material than the 1960s Jungle Book.
Yeah, I can go for that. I think that's more the aspect of this that I don't understand, like just taking out the musical parts of it and trying to dramatize it and make it more serious. I mean, it's still Disney. They're not going to make it that much more serious. It's not looking at it with, you know, through a completely different lens. It's like looking at it, watching the movie through like a sepia, you know, tint. It's like, okay, I see this is the same. And like the colors are a little different and it looks a little like gritty or whatever. But it's still roughly the same thing. There's not adding anything to the story. This is just a way for Disney to make another $1 billion.
Yeah.
It feels like a cash grab, just using crazy anime. And that's what Disney knows that they can do is throw $200 million behind $150 and a full tank of gas and
shit ton of cocaine
made out of wool. Yeah. No, it's just $200 million and be like, oh, we know we're going to make this back 5 times. And it's not giving. It's money that could be used elsewhere to make new properties and new things we all love. I love Lion King. Lion King's, I'll watch that right now. I don't need another Lion King. This is not, you know, once we all see this, we're not going to go back and probably watch this. We're going to go back and watch the first one. And it's not going to be like, which one are you going to show your kids? It's not going to be the live action one. It's going to be the original one.
Exactly. It's the same thing that happened with The Jungle Book. Like The Jungle Book made, I think, over $1 billion globally.
It did,
the remake.
Yeah.
But nobody's going to be sitting their kids down and showing them The Jungle Book unless they're just trying to like shut them up and just have them like watch a movie for 2 hours. If they're showing them like, you know, a classic of their childhood, it's the original musical Jungle Book. And I agree, this is going to be something very similar. The only thing, at least the one thing I think this movie has going over the Jungle Book is this is there are no human characters in this. Because yeah. I think Mowgli also we're getting that fucking Mowgli Netflix movie in December, which is hilarious.
Right.
But at least this, I feel like it, depending on what the music is like and what the performances are like from Donald Glover and Seth Rogen and the whole cast, it might be a little more rewatchable than The Jungle Book was. But yeah, this is definitely just a movie I want to see in theaters for the novelty of it. And to like, I do think that a lot of people are shitting on this movie way too quickly. And everybody's like, oh, the original version is better, more iconic. And like, look at the color palette, look at the animation. This isn't real animation. Like they're trying to erase the original from existence. It's like, no, I don't think that's what they're doing. And I also think that we should respect the work that, you know, the 3D animators are putting into a movie like this, because it is still a technological achievement and yeah. amazing.
The animation is beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. It looks I can't believe they pulled it off. I remember when the trailer premiered, I think during like one of the NBA games I was watching with my family, my dad was like, it sounds fucking stupid, but it's like, holy shit. Like, are those like, did they actually get just like animals to do this? Like, no, of course not. But like, just the fact that like it spurs that thought in your mind, that's how good it looks.
Yeah, I think of course not, but maybe.
Yeah, it's remarkable in itself. But yeah, this is not going to be ingrained in the next generation's memories, I think, nearly as much as the original Lion King was ingrained in our generation's memories.
Yeah, and exactly. It's more of like a grandstanding of showing the technological achievements, and maybe that'll spur other original properties that have that type of animation style. But for right now, I really don't see the point in this other than Disney making $1 billion.
Yeah, I mean, this is Disney's Avatar. I know Disney's like partnering with James Cameron to release the next Avatars, but this is Disney's Avatar, I feel like.
Yeah.
Avatar didn't need to exist, but it was beautiful and people still talk about it and it made a shit ton of money.
Right. I at least think that Avatar has more of a reason to exist than this Lion King.
Because 3D
animation. Because why?
Because 3D?
No, because it was at least like, besides it was derivative, but it was telling the story in a different way. If someone's like, hey, it's Lion King, but it's all alien, like, and it's like all alien creatures on a different planet, I'd be like, all right, I'm into this. Like, this seems, I'd be way more into that.
I mean,
like,
that's what the Lion King is. It's a Hamlet with animals.
Exactly. And I can justify the first Lion King, but you can only do Hamlet with animals so many times.
Yeah.
At least change up the animals. Like, put it underwater.
Set it in Canada.
Right. Yeah. Make it be moose.
The Moose King. Moose and caribou. Yeah, I'm down for that. Do that. Yeah. Make that the Lion King 2. I hope they make the Lion King 1.5 with this 3D technology. Yeah.
Yeah. Now that I'd be down for that. I could dip my toe in that pool.
Yeah. Give me more John Oliver, Keegan-Michael Key, and Seth Rogen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I could definitely dig that. All right. I feel like that's enough of Disney, but should we go right into Disney, or should we go right into punching adults punching each other in the face?
Let's just go right into Disney. We're already on the Disney train. Might as well stay
exactly.
on it. They're not even paying us for this.
Yeah, not yet. We're only sponsored by CBD oil and CBD oil affiliates.
Yeah, we're trying. So we only make money in states where that's legal.
Right. CBD oil is actually legal in all 50 states.
Oh,
Robert,
you're right. Okay, so we're making bank. We're trying. Yeah. We're trying real hard to sell out here.
Yeah, exactly. I know my company is. We advertise CBD oils quite a bit.
Man, I'm kind of jealous.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that exciting. It's doing well, but
it's just fake weed.
It's just fake weed. I don't know if it actually works. I've never tried CBD oil. I imagine that it does something for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Or else it wouldn't exist, right? 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 So let's go right in the review. We've got, for the first one, Ralph Breaks the Internet, the sequel to the 2012 Disney original movie Wreck-It Ralph, starring John C. Reilly as the titular Ralph and who's starring in this movie? Sarah Silverman as Princess Vanellope, and Gal Gadot as what is her name? Shank.
Yeah.
Yeah. And plenty of other fun characters that everybody can get behind. And I saw Wreck-It Ralph and Ralph Breaks the Internet in the same day.
Yeah. How'd you feel about that?
I thought it was okay. It was good to see positive vibes just like being shot in your brain. You know, sometimes you just need a win.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, oh, it's like everything is wrong with the world. We all know this. And sometimes these Disney movies are just a good reprieve from the hard hitting dramas that we all love to watch. I think I might have liked Wreck-It Ralph 1 more.
I definitely, like, I'll put my foot down on that. I think Wreck-It Ralph 1 is a better film.
Yeah.
But that's also just like, so I have a couple reasons. One, I think, like, you know, I'm biased towards the first one because the first one was actually focused on video games and video game culture. You had all these references that I was just having a ball watching and getting all these, like the fact that there's a Metal Gear Solid reference in the first Wreck-It Ralph is something I was not expecting, but I loved it. This one didn't really hit me as hard just because it was about the internet and, like, you know, there's really not that much to do with video games. It's more about, like, commenting on, like, BuzzFeed, and you see a lot of, like, the references are a lot less fun. And, like, this movie felt like a lot of product placement, like you were saying earlier in the episode, because it's like you have, like, eBay logos and Amazon logos everywhere. You get, like, you have, like, Snapchat towers, and it just almost felt like self-congratulatory at times.
Yeah. And they basically go to Disney World in this movie. Let's lay out the premise for this movie. You've got Ralph and Vanellope are very happy in their day-to-day lives, playing the games, etc. Vanellope has got a little bit of wanderlust, saying, I don't know if I want to do this for the rest of my life. And then, as Ralph tries to help her, he ends up causing something that breaks her game. And so they're like, hey, we're going to disconnect this game. Vanellope, you're going to have to figure out a new thing to do. When they figure out that on the internet, you can buy the part that is necessary, and they need to raise the money to buy it so they can restore the game and everyone can go back and having a good time. That's the basic setup. So they go into the internet searching, and hilarity and seriousness follow.
Yeah. And I will say, I think one of the things that I thought the first movie did better is I feel like the first movie actually had more dramatic heft than this one. And I don't know, maybe that was intentional. And like they just didn't want to replicate this the formula of the first one again, which is commendable. There was a save the world moment, but it didn't feel as it didn't feel like there was as much at stake as there was in the first one, even though I think if you think about it, you know, the title of the movie is pretty apt, because the main conflict in the third act of this movie is dramatic, and it puts, like, the world order, like the modern world order at stake by the time you get to the third act. But I never felt like, oh man, something like real, some actual consequences are going to come from this conflict. I never really felt like that, like I did in the first one. And I don't know if we want to spoil the first one. Like, the first one is 6 years old. I feel like we can kind of talk about the ending and talk about the first one as a whole.
I mean, what's really to spoil? Like, figure out that, yeah, this guy has been messing up all the games, and specifically Princess Vanellope's. I mean, I'm calling her Princess. Yeah.
Yeah, Vanellope's, I mean, game. That's an entire thing in this movie, is that, like, oh, she is an actual princess, which I think is one of my favorite parts about this movie, is the whole, like, how they deconstruct Disney princess tropes. I think those are pretty funny. And my favorite one is that I didn't even think about before. It was when they're like, all you got to do is stare into a puddle of water. Like,
magic pool of water.
Stare into important water is what they phrase it as. Water. Important water. And then, like, you'll have an epiphany. And I was like,
yeah, and
holy,
you'll sing
shit,
a song.
Like, I never realized that, but that is something that every Disney princess does.
Oh yeah, they love that. And I think the way that they handle that whole sequence is one of the better ones in the movie. I think it's really funny and insightful. And that's where I think this movie wants to get insightful about the internet. And it barely does. Like, it, I don't know. It's like, hey, we've all been on the internet before. I get it. I think the emotional part of the emotional arc of this movie feels very constructed.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel very natural. I mean, I get what it didn't seem to be inherent in these characters. It felt very much like a TV episode telling you about friendship and what it means to be a good friend.
Yeah.
Rather than these characters making choices and it actually going across a coherent narrative defined by the characters and the choices that they would make because of their personality or their character flaws. So, but the ending did kind of hit me pretty, like, I think it had a very fulfilling emotional arc once it got towards the end, but I felt like I was almost manipulated into how like good it was.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh, okay. Yeah, I agree with this, but the way we got here is kind of weird.
Yeah. I do think that the emotional arc in this movie, you could argue, is better than the first one, because I think that the emotional growth that these characters go through in this movie is a lot, like, it's not painted in as broad of a stroke as in the first film. But I also think it was a little bit less satisfying, because so in the first film, the whole premise is that Ralph is a bad guy. He's like, he was programmed to be a bad guy, but he doesn't want to be, you know, for the rest of his life. And I think seeing
he's Wreck-It Ralph, he wrecks everything, literally, and he can't stop.
Yeah. But seeing him go through and, like, you know, eventually become the hero and become like the self-sacrificing guy by the end of the movie, I think is a very emotionally satisfying arc. And I still, like, when I watch that, I've seen that movie multiple times because I love the first Wreck-It Ralph. And I still tear up a little bit towards the end when he finally decides, like, you know what? I can kill myself to save this arcade. And when he, like, you know, when he decides, I'm going to blow up the volcano to, like, destroy this world and save everybody. And he's, like, falling through the sky and he's looking at the little medallion that Vanellope made for him. I was like, ooh, that gets me. That gets me good. In this movie, I didn't really have that moment. But the way that Ralph went, like, that moment, it came pretty close when he was talking to Vanellope and being like, hey, I get it. Like, this is where we have to go from here. This is how we grow as people and as characters. And I think that was it's pretty bold of Disney to just not try to rehash the plot of the first film and, like, the emotional arcs of the first film.
Right.
And I do think that this is more relevant and, like, more relatable, I think, than the arcs in the first film, because this is just it's a much more grounded emotional conflict than it was in the first one. Like, I don't think there aren't that many audience members that are like, I'm a bad guy, but I want to be good so I can relate to this character. But
I'm
I think,
a bad guy, but the world needs bad guys. Yeah. So the good guys have something to do, you know.
But I do think there are a lot of people that can relate to Ralph's arc in this movie about, like, you know,
what friendship is, what it means,
what is being a good friend. And, like, what is, you know, don't hook yourself onto your friends and don't drag them down with you if you're being a piece of shit.
Yeah, no, I think the arc of the first movie is very much about accepting who you are, accepting your flaws, and realizing how those make you who you are, so they can't be bad.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a much more Disney, you know, moral to have. And this one is a little more complex. I think the way they get there again is a little convoluted and has a lot of different things going on in all different directions. And there is a part of the movie that's just like, hey, here's an advertisement for everything that Disney has.
Yeah. And it's, like, fun. Like, you know, Disney owns so much at this point that, like, you'll be able to see those references and be like, oh, I get that. That's cool. I understood that reference, which is in itself a Disney reference, which is kind of weird to think about.
Yeah, it's like, oh, wow, Iron Man, you're right, Disney does own that. Oh, Stormtroopers, wait, Disney does own that too. Wait, the Disney, wait a second.
Oh, the Muppets. Oh, shit, they own everything.
Disney owns everything. That's really the moral of this story, is Disney can throw their dick around and, like,
Disney owns the internet, yeah.
Yeah, that's the more the lesson.
I will say, so speaking of this, though, like, the meta nature of the movie, I think, was kind of unexpected.
Yeah,
and I think they pulled it off pretty well.
Oh yeah, especially the subtext of memeage.
Yeah,
of all the different things they have, like, oh, what's trending right now? All you got to do is copy that exactly. The way that functions is pretty
interesting. I mean, that's what a meme is. Yeah.
Yeah, memetic. I think. Yeah, exactly. I think it does a good job of displaying a lot of internet culture, the good and the bad, and especially the way the humans react to it. There's a lot more humans in this movie,
I feel
like.
It's fun when they cut away to the real world of just like cubicle workers on the internet.
Yeah, hey, you like, see that video?
Yeah, you see that? Check this out, man.
Yeah, it's real random. I think that's funny.
Yeah.
But overall, this movie wasn't very funny either.
Yeah, I think it had some moments, but again, I think that the first one was more enjoyable. I think that there was just more fun in the first movie, but I will commend it for not feeling dated, which is something I think that like any movie that tries to tackle the subject of the internet, because the internet is constantly changing at such a rapid rate, anything that solidifies itself within a timeline, I feel like usually feels pretty dated as soon as it comes out. But I think this movie did a decent job of not feeling dated. Like there are some things where I was like, all right, you can tell that they wrote this like 2 years ago when they were still in pre-production for this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing was as bad as like the first example that comes to mind, other than the Emoji Movie. But we don't talk about that. Because that entire
TJ Miller's epic.
God. Yeah. What he left Silicon Valley for.
Right.
The first moment that comes to mind, which is another Disney film, was in Black Panther. When they have the what are those joke, it's like, because that was dated by the time Black Panther came out, and watching it again
what are
today,
those? Like the croc bit,
the shoes. Yeah. When she's looking at the sandals and he's like, what are those? And I'm like, oh, fuck, that's like a year old at this point. Oh, don't do that. I think this movie did a decent job of avoiding tropes like that and not making it like, I'm curious to see what companies that are featured in this movie even exist like 2 years from now. I think most of the major plot points that have to do with internet companies are going to be fine. Like, I don't think eBay's going anywhere. I don't think Amazon's going anywhere. I don't think BuzzFeed or YouTube are going anywhere. And I don't think they didn't rely too much on like mean humor to
thank God.
Yeah. To make people laugh. So I think overall, this movie, for what it was trying to do, it did a pretty good job.
Yeah, I just don't know how well it fit with the original property.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, is like they clearly didn't want to just do like another video game movie.
Yeah, I like the idea of a video game character feeling like they need something more complex. I think that's hilarious. Like if the Mario and Mario Kart is like, yeah, I like this. But he actually gets into Gran Turismo or like Forza.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, this is what I really want. Like more tracks and all this. Like,
yeah, I kind of like
interesting
in the beginning too, how they have like, you know, they have a minor philosophical or existential crisis where they're like, so we know that we're video game characters and we know we're just ones and zeros in a simulation. Like, what do you think that means for us? Like,
I want to explore that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's... So I wonder if we're going to get another entry in this franchise, because, you know, I thought after 2 years of not getting a sequel announcement to the first Wreck-It Ralph that was just going to be a one-off film. So I was pretty surprised when they ended up announcing Ralph Breaks the Internet back in like 2015 or 2016 whenever they announced this movie.
I wonder if they will make another one. I'm sure this has already made more than half of its total budget back. I'm sure it'll
recoup
its losses,
especially because this weekend there's like nothing of note really coming out, so
right, especially for kids.
I would not be surprised to see this top the box office next weekend as well.
Yeah, I mean, Possession of Hannah Grace is coming out, so
oh man, you know the kids are gonna be flocking to that.
I don't even know what that is. I just there's
like a low budget exorcism movie every year.
Yeah. Oh man, they've got that one. So I hate how horror. This is completely beside the point. I didn't see it during. This will be a good. Let's segue and then I'll lead in with this because it's a trailer I saw before Creed 2. So segue. And Fantastic Beasts 2 did better in the Monday box office.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
The Monday people suck. But before we segue, before we segue, what are your final thoughts on Ralph Breaks the Internet?
My final thoughts are, this is good. It's a worthy adaptation. It's better than most movies, which is a pretty low bar, but like, if you're a fan of Wreck-It Ralph, and I'm a big fan of, I like, you know, Ralph is fine. I'm a big fan of Princess Vanellope. Yeah. I really like her character. I think she's adorable. The
fact that Sarah Silverman is she's officially a Disney princess.
Yeah, I think that's hilarious. We finally have a Jewish Disney princess. please don't send hate mail to me.
Send it to Brian Williams instead.
Yeah, send it to Brian Williams, care of MSNBC. I think this movie is good. I liked it, especially if you have kids, take them to see it. Yeah, but as like a film, didn't really do it for me. As a flick, it's not a huge blockbuster. But you know, this is really, I think, like, this is a wait and see movie.
Yeah,
you don't need to see it in theaters unless you have kids and you want them to be quiet. And make sure you tell them to be quiet before you get into the theater. Be like, hey, rule about movies, shut the fuck up.
Or just go to the draft house.
Where there's no kids. But exactly, that would be way weirder. Just a bunch of adults watching an animated kids movie.
Hey, man, The Incredibles did it just fine.
Yeah, well, it's less kid-centric.
Because the last Maybe. Little's so thick.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You got it. Anything with Bob Odenkirk in it couldn't be that kid-centric.
Yeah, that's true. Bob Odenkirk and Carrie Coon, yeah.
Yeah. All right. What about you, Robert? What are your final thoughts?
I will say I feel pretty much the same way. I think that it's fine as a flick. Like, I'm not disappointed in it by any means. I think I'm happy that we get more of Ralph, because I think Ralph and Vanellope are two of the best Disney original characters we've had in a long time. But I prefer the first one. I don't think this one is as rewatchable as the first one. I don't think it's as funny. I don't think it's as exciting. But I don't know. I'm also, you know, probably a bit older than the demographic this movie was aiming for. So maybe those damn Gen X or Gen Zers will enjoy this movie more, because, you know, where I get a kick out of seeing like Mortal Kombat and Metal Gear Solid references in a movie, maybe their kids being like, oh, that's an Instagram joke, oh, that's a Snapchat joke, and they're just, you know,
finally a movie for me.
Yeah. I know what BuzzFeed is. But yeah, I think as a film, you know, I don't think this is gonna win Best Animated Picture.
I'd be sad.
I'd be pretty sad too. As a flick, it's fine. It's fun. It's funny enough. I think there are some really good moments in the film, though. And like, I think most of them revolve around the deconstruction of Disney's previous tropes and just like the meta nature of the narrative. And like, you know, one of my favorite scenes is the song number that Vanellope has, like her send up of like the princess song in like the Grand Theft Auto world. I was like, that's pretty good. This is pretty good.
Pretty funny.
And I think it's worth seeing in theaters if you don't want to deal with kids. Like, there's obviously going to be kids in the theater when you go see it, unless you go to the draft house. Go to the draft house. but I would say, you know, if you're not that big a fan of the first one, you could definitely just wait for this to be on like HBO or Netflix or, you know, Disney's own streaming service whenever that launches.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. Three and a half out of five.
Yeah, three and a half around there.
Agreed.
All right. Well, here's my segue. So I was watching Creed 2. Well, I was about to. And I saw the preview. And this horror trope now for their trailers of just like, oh, let's do like a jump scare. And that's our trailer is going to be one lead up to a jump scare. Fuck it. I hate it. It's so stupid.
Was it a trailer for that Hannah Grace movie?
No, it's for that stupid like boy possessed thing where it's like he's being hypnotized.
Is that a sequel to Boy Erased?
Yeah, Boy Deraced.
Yeah.
No.
Wait, what are you talking? I don't think I've seen this trailer. What are you talking about?
It starts with like this old guy and he's talking and there's like a metronome. It's like, And he's saying, like, let it, everything fall back and blah, 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 blah. Like, this couch, blah, 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 blah. And then he's like, now, Matt, like, remember
the sunken
before
place.
Remember before you were born. And like, oh, okay. He's like, I'm not talking to Charlie anymore. I'm talking to the demon who's like residing in his body. And it's like, bum. And then it just goes to a different scene where it's like this dumb setup for a jump scare. And it's just like, oh, like it's I hate it. It's so stupid.
What,
it's, dude, like,
I haven't seen this trailer yet. What fucking movie is this?
I'm going to have to send you the trailer. I have no idea what it's called because I'm sure it's dog shit. Like,
you got to stop going to the Regal, man.
There's just so many trailers. It's like 20 minutes of trailers.
It is 20 minutes of trailers.
It's gotten a little like, I like trailers.
I like good trailers.
Yeah, it's become too much. Like, I like seeing what's coming out, mm-hmm. You know? Show me what's coming out.
I think there's an art to a good trailer, but you know, there's just not that many of them anymore. And there's so many cookie cutter trailers coming out for, especially in the big chains. Will they'll, you know, accept more and more trailer advances for studios? Just don't go to Regal. That's my point.
Yeah. But I've got their rewards card. I just got I saw Wreck-It Ralph or Ralph Breaks the Internet for free.
That's a good deal.
Yeah, because I've seen so many movies there. And I'm a rewards card.
So what jump scares were in Creed 2?
Not a whole lot. Let's lay out this movie is Creed 2 starring Michael B. Jordan, Sylvester Stallone, and Tessa Thompson is a sequel to Creed 1 and also to Rocky 4. Which, I mean, really, this is much more of a companion piece to Rocky IV than it is a sequel to.
It really, it's kinda, is. Like, yeah.
Yeah. It establishes this is going to be a franchise. There are going to be 5 Creeds, and this is as good as it's going to get. I guarantee you.
It's all downhill from here.
This is the last good Creed movie. And this movie is pretty good, but it's not amazing. It's not as good as the first Creed, but it's all downhill from here, man.
I agree.
So basically the concept is like the first scene, Creed, Adonis Creed, son of Apollo Creed, classically murdered by Ivan Drago. And
it was self-defense.
Only technically. I've seen it's funny. The best part of the Creed movie so far is when Adonis Creed is watching old footage of an old Rocky movie and the boxing is insane. Like, yeah. Haymaker, haymaker, haymaker. Just like absolutely annihilating. I'm like, no, the ref should stop the fight, dude. Like the idea that it should be the boxing coach's job to call the fight and not the ref, who it's like their job to make sure nobody dies.
Yeah.
Like
that's their one job.
Yeah. It's like the dumbest thing ever. And so, but barring that, it's that is almost like a critique I have with this movie is that it's tied itself to an inferior movie.
Yeah.
I think Creed 2 is better than Rocky 4. Rocky 4 is ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's an insane movie made for the insane people of the 80s.
Maybe we could all then live together.
You know.
Yeah, Rocky. Yeah.
You fucking know that Reagan was bankrolling that movie, though, back when it came out.
Exactly. That is what an insane movie.
That movie is the reason the wall came down.
Yeah, exactly. Rocky IV would have been better if they had the match in Afghanistan instead of Moscow.
Yeah.
That would have been a more politically transparent way of doing that movie. But yeah. Okay, so let's get into this movie. It starts with Creed winning the heavyweight title, which the first like 20, 30 minutes of this movie feel very empty. And it's almost like that was part of the plan, is to make it like part of like up to about the part where the movie actually starts. It felt like the movie starts about halfway through with the second fight.
Oh yeah.
In the movie. And I'm trying to be like, not spoilers at all, but it feels like the second fight should have started within the first like 10 or 15 minutes because that's when the real movie starts. And I felt like, well, we got to have a way to set this up. And I'm like, you don't need to set this up. Just do it. Like,
yeah,
it like all the motivations are there the whole time. I feel like this movie could be better if they just lay out the emotional arcs a little bit better. There are three main emotional arcs and they all fulfill at the end, but they're all differently interesting. I'd say the least interesting is probably Adonis's emotional arc because they don't really bring it in. They don't like highlight like his relationship with his dad, like why he's doing the things he's doing. For Rocky, they've got his thing with his son going on. And I'm like, okay, I get where this is going. And then they have Ivan and Victor Drago's storyline, which is by far the more interesting storyline in this movie that has a way more satisfying and nuanced arc than anything else going on in this movie.
Yeah, which is, I think, the most surprising thing about this movie is that...
Yeah.
This is going to sound like a weird comparison, but I feel like it almost pulls this is not an insult to the movie, but it pulls a Batman versus Superman where it reframes the final conflict into a much more sympathetic and also traumatic conflict from Rocky IV, where like you kind of like it like Ivan Drago and Victor Drago still obviously the antagonists of the film, and they're not like, you know, they're not that likable, but they are sympathetic, which is something that, you know, Ivan Drago was not in Rocky IV.
Right. Not even close.
Yeah, but to get more backstory onto why the Dragos are fighting like this and why they're chasing this dream and why they're so ruthless, it's kind of refreshing to get insight into a conflict like that. Like, and it doesn't... I don't want to use revisionist, but it's cool to see movies that take a dehumanized enemy and humanize them in such unexpected ways.
Yeah. It reframes Rocky IV in a way that reveals subtext that wasn't readily apparent, but make complete sense. Like, oh, of course this guy is like a tool of the oppressive Soviet government. Yeah. And of course, if he loses, his life will be fucked.
Yeah. And it was fucked. And they go into that in this movie, which I think, you know, is one of the better parts of this film, which is it feels weird to talk about Apollo or not Apollo, Adonis being like the weakest character in this film.
Yeah.
But I still think that this movie is definitely worth seeing just because of what it does for the Rocky franchise as a whole, and specifically the Dragos.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of things happen in the first 15, 20 minutes that I feel like they could have just like done a quick recap with.
Yeah.
Like,
and you could have cut out 20 minutes from, like, this movie was like over 2 hours long. I don't think it needed to be. And I think you could have cut most of the fat from the first act of this film.
However, yeah.
I do like that the film opens with the Dragos. I was not expecting that, and I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly. I think that was really interesting. And there are some interesting shots in the first part, like when Adonis is warming up for his heavyweight bout.
Yeah.
And they've got like Sylvester Stallone enters like slowly, like off camera.
Yeah.
And then suddenly moves in. It's like rotating around. I'm
dude,
like,
for a second,
okay.
I swear to God, I thought that they were gonna open and be like, oh, Rocky died. Off screen, and he's just imagining Rocky's ghost like inspiring him, and I'm like,
yeah.
I'm when you saw his reflection in the mirror slowly coming up to Creed, I was like, oh,
he's dead. Yeah, he's a fucking vampire now. This movie's about to get real weird.
Yeah, that's Creed 3.
Yeah, Creed 3 is right. Yeah, it goes standard. The Sylvester Stallone, first of all, he co-wrote this one, and I think it's pretty obvious because I think there's a new focus on Rocky in this one that the first one didn't have. It kind of was like the first one functioned so well because it took this new character, and then Rocky was kind of like an old wizard in the back. It was and it's kind of like, you know who Rocky is.
Yeah.
And we don't really care about him. It's not about him. It's about Adonis. Rocky's there to like support and add nuance. And for here, they kind of focus. You can tell that Sly was giving himself like some choice scenes of acting. And he's like, well, maybe I could win the best actor this time.
Yeah. I'm pretty okay with it because I think that Creed 1 and 2 are probably the best performances Sylvester Stallone has given in a film.
And at least since Rocky 1 or First Blood.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. Rocky 1, First Blood, probably both better than this. But I do think these are up there, and these are really, like, these are unexpected performances you're getting from someone like Sylvester Stallone, who has become just kind of a meme at this point.
Yeah, and I love how, so I know everyone likes to forget that Rocky 5 didn't exist, but a big part of Rocky 5 was how much brain damage, like, he had, and I feel like we're just not addressing, I think, in seeing some of the hits that happened in this movie, you're like, they need to start talking, they need to stop acting like, he's not getting brain damage. Like, they need to have that conversation of, like, hey, dude,
you're getting fucked up. Like,
I know you've got millions of dollars and your wife has got, like a music career or whatever. Like, you should maybe take it down and, like, become a promoter. Like, dude.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully, like, you know, if Creed just becomes, like, a trilogy, I'd be pretty cool if that's, like, the emotional arc of Creed 3, where he starts realizing, like, oh, they're like, they say a lot in this movie, like, hey, there are more important things than winning a fight.
Yeah.
But by the end of the movie, it becomes about, like, why are you winning the fight?
Right.
Like, that's kind of like, I feel like it's a betrayal to the themes of the story. But I would love to see in Creed 3 something like a story about how, like, oh, maybe he should stop putting himself in physical danger and harming himself because he's clearly set for life. Like, his wife has a music career that is taking off over the course of this film. He's got a daughter now. So, and you know, one of the big themes in this movie is that Adonis's dad died and wasn't there for him as he was growing up. And that's part of the reason that he had such a hard upbringing that you kind of explore in Creed 1. So I feel like if they want to make a respectable trilogy out of this new franchise, it should end with Creed realizing, like, maybe it's not the best idea to continually get hit over and over again just to prove my masculinity, just to prove that I'm better than someone from a foreign nation.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what what this movie has a problem with, I think, is the motivations. I think they assume that we get why it's happening.
Yeah.
But this whole time I'm kind of like, yo, dude, why are you doing this? Like,
yeah.
Well, and it, like, you know what's going to happen. Like, potentially.
And that's the thing that really got me about this movie, too, is, like, it really was more about, like, a personal conviction to a personal conviction of, like, being the top boxer. Because, like, throughout the film, like, from the first act onwards, you know, Creed is the top boxer. Like, he's the world champion.
Yeah. But they make a point of, and I think the first fight, they do a good job of me, like, when I was watching, I'm like, wow, this is, like, really underwhelming compared to how dynamic the fights were in the first movie. I think that's one of the best parts about it is, like, well they're filmed.
Especially, dude, that climactic one take.
Oh yeah. Man. One of the best boxing scenes, like, in history.
Yeah.
And because there's so many, you know, but I think that they make a point of making it really seem shallow and me being like, is that how this movie's going to be? Like, that boring ass fight. And then they really up the game and show you, like, oh no, this is, you know, this is supposed to feel this way.
Yeah.
And kind of, but I don't buy that he's like, oh, let me fight this guy because my world championship belt feels kind of like shitty. I'm like, yo, man, take some, like, shitty fights. Like, who is this guy? This guy's just fighting in the Ukraine. And he's like, we challenge the guy. I'm like, who is, like, has anybody ever heard of this guy? Like, that's not how world, like, obviously it's like a promoter's wet dream to be like, yeah let's give him a shot at the champ. But, like, that's like a fight, like, a few years down the line.
Yeah.
And you think about, like, he's 31, like Michael B. Jordan. Like, that's, like, getting to be pretty old in, like, boxing years.
Yeah.
That's one thing that one issue that I have, and I think I always talk about the scene in Creed 1 when he's, like, watching old footage of, like they have this really serious boxing fight, and he's like, oh, wow, this is, like, a serious take. And then he's, like, watching old footage of his dad and Rocky fighting, like, studying it. Like, it's, like, classic footage.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, Rocky and Apollo, like, throwing punches and flying across the ring. Like, the most insane. Like, no, this is. And he's, like, taking it really seriously. Like, oh, yeah, this is how it used to be.
Yeah.
Like, no way. That I feel like this Creed 1 kind of made that a funny little in-joke, but this one has a harder time separating itself from the insane past
of
the franchise. Like, it needs to be like, oh no, this is a serious, but it can't get away from it. Like, it almost leans in further. Like, you get like the fight montage, or you get the training montage and all this. Like, it leans into the one of the maybe the more crowd pleasing parts of the Rocky franchise, but not
for sure
the direction that I feel like the series needs to go in order to separate itself completely.
Yeah, but I think that, you know, maybe that was intentional, because I do think that this film felt way more like a Rocky film than Creed 1 did, which can be good or bad depending on what you're looking for from this franchise. But they're like, I'm not going to lie. Like, I was pretty, I felt pretty pumped watching like the montages, the training montages, and hearing those. Like, I think it was fun to watch them synthesize like the triumphant horns, like the soundtrack of the original Rocky films.
Yeah.
And then they had like modern rap music playing. And like, it was a neat little synthesis of like the Creed franchise and the Rocky franchise coming together. But I will say that this definitely felt a lot more like a Rocky film than a sequel to Creed. And I didn't know that Sylvester Stallone co-wrote this, but that makes a lot of sense now when I think back on it. But
yeah,
it was enjoyable. I had a good time with this movie. I definitely think it's worth seeing in theaters. And I think that these fight scenes are super well done. And I think all the performances are great too. Like, Sylvester Stallone does a great job. Michael B. Jordan does a great job. His emotional arc wasn't the best in the film, but I think he gives it his all.
Especially at the end. I think the ending is, I was very caught off guard.
Yeah.
But it was tight.
Yeah. Yeah. I know it sounds like we're criticizing this movie a lot. I feel like we're being harsher on it than at least I would want to come off as, because I did enjoy this movie, and I think it's definitely worth seeing in theaters. And I also think it's a worthy sequel to Creed. But if you're also like a hardcore Rocky fan, I think you'll be happy with this film as well.
Agreed. I think this is a good synthesis. This is almost it's more of a bridge between the Rocky and Creed movies than a sequel to Creed. I know we have said that a few times.
Yeah.
But it's funny that this movie is coming second. It does feel a little bit like a backstep, a backstep for the series, but also it might convince some other people like, hey, you should watch like Creed 1 so that you can see Creed 2 and see how this plays out. So hopefully it gets more people to see the first one, gets more people to see this one, and then we can keep having Creed movies, because I just want to see Michael B. Jordan do pull-ups.
Yeah, I hope that Creed 3 is like another like a connection to Rocky 3, but I also hope that like it's just Mr. T coming back to fight. Like, it's not his son or like not somebody related to Mr. T. It's just Clubber Lang coming back to fight Creed.
It's like a Rocky Balboa style, where it's like really old Clubber Lang trying to fight Adonis, and Adonis kills him.
Dude, Adonis fucking kills him.
Yeah, he kills him.
They flip the script on Rocky 4. Yeah,
this is what you get from Mick, man.
I do kind of want to go back and watch Rocky Balboa, because I remember seeing that in theaters when I was young and it first came out. But dude, I don't remember a single fucking thing about that movie.
Oh, it's hilarious. Rocky is like 60.
Yeah,
and he fights. He fights like it's like the whole thing is, I don't even remember how they get Rocky to do it. It's like, hey, Rocky, you're so old. And he's like, yeah, I'm pretty old. And he has to fight to get like his boxing license so he can fight the heavyweight. I don't know if he's the heavyweight champion in the world, but they have him fight like an exhibition match just to see, because that everyone's at like, oh, this guy is good, but he couldn't beat Rocky in his prime. And so it's like an exhibition match or whatever. And it's just like, all right, this is a little, it's a little out there.
I forgot that movie was directed by Sylvester Stallone too. That was like the mid 2000s is when he was really trying to come back with like remakes of Rambo that he directed, remake of Rocky he directed.
Yeah. Which both the remake of Rocky and the remake of Rambo were both better than the last movies in those series.
Oh yeah. The remake of Rambo, or not remake, the relaunch of Rambo.
Yeah.
Guilty pleasure. I love that movie. That movie's so much fun.
Oh yeah, it was back that like hype, those hyper violent
Dude, when he turned people into movies. Hamburger Helper, yeah.
Yeah, with a 50 cal.
Yeah.
Me yammers.
Ripping dudes' throats out with his bare hands. Like, oh, man. Especially when I was like a freshman in high school. I was like, dude, I'm so fucking here for this.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's a good high school male fantasy movie. You're like, yeah, I want to watch this guy kill a bunch of other people.
Yeah, which is, I think it's respect. Like, I respect to Sylvester Stallone, too, for evolving the character of Rocky Balboa to the point he is in Creed 2, where it's like, you know, he's not trying to prove his masculinity anymore. He's just like trying to reconnect with his son and like, you know, what is being a good father anymore?
Right. Yeah. I think it goes on with a lot of, it hits a lot of themes, not all of them as well as it wanted to, but well, as it sticks the landing.
Oh yeah. Yeah. This is final thoughts, 'cause we're going a little over time here and we know we've been talking about this movie for a while. I think it works as a flick. I think it's super satisfying, very crowd pleasing. And I think you're going to feel good walking out of the movie theater by the end of this film. Totally worth seeing in theaters. As a film, Creed 1 is better. I think Creed 1 is significantly better, and it's going to be talked about a lot more than Creed 2. But I do think this is a worthy successor to the franchise, and you know, it's doing well at the box office. So we're probably going to see a Creed 3, and I'm going to be there in the theater for that too.
Agreed. Yeah, I think as a film, Creed 1 is better. It is like Rocky 2. Mm-hmm. Rocky 1 was better. This is still a good, like, Rocky 1 did the film and flick kind of perfectly. This one really does the flick well. But I'd recommend going out and seeing it, especially like nothing's coming out next week.
Yeah.
Check this out.
Man, I'm excited for the next Rambo film too. Considering how old Sylvester Stallone is, like, and considering what he's done with Rocky, I want to see what he does with Rambo.
Me too. I'm ready for it. All right. Well, let's wrap this bit. What are we going to see next week? I think we might have to decide this later because I'm looking at the release schedule and literally nothing. I don't know if I want to see The Possession of Hannah Grace.
No, I don't want to see that either. I mean, we can talk about fucking Mowgli. That's going to be on Netflix.
Yeah, maybe we should just do like a Netflix roundup, like see a bunch of the Netflix movies out and review those.
You know what? Let's do that. You still need to watch Buster Scruggs.
Need to watch Buster Scruggs. I need to watch everything outside the first 10 minutes of Outlaw King, which was great. The first
Dude,
10
right?
minutes of it.
That opening that scene. That one shot.
Yeah, it was insane.
So good. Outlaw King, I think, is definitely worth watching all the way through.
Yeah. All right. We got Buster Scruggs, Outlaw King. What else should we watch? Is there another one that's out?
Buster Scruggs, Outlaw King, Mowgli. I think that'll be good for next weekend because. Boy,
oh, yeah. Mowgli. Yeah.
There's nothing coming out next weekend that is worth seeing in theaters.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm very happy we're doing this. Yeah. I don't have to leave my apartment. Yeah. It's so cold in Chicago.
Yeah.
It is 21 degrees in Chicago. Please send help.
It is 68 right now in Texas.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Well, whatever.
So cold. I had to put on like a light jacket to go out today. It was rough.
Really? Yeah. You should jump in the ocean. Well, all right. I've been Dan Leo, your faithful A-host. And you can follow me on Twitter at The Dan Leo Show. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Viewing Angles. Check out the website, viewingangles.com. Follow me on Letterboxd, username D Leo. What do you got going on in your life, Rob?
You can follow me on Twitter at Robert Jr. JR. You can follow me on Instagram at Robert Jr. JR. You can follow me on Letterboxd at Robert Jr. JR.
I love consistency.
I love it too.
All right. Well, we will catch you next week with 3 movie reviews.
And it's not going to cost us a thing except the Netflix subscription.
Hell yeah.
Which is literally the price of a movie ticket every month.
Yeah, exactly. It's like Movie Pass.
But it works.
For way more movies than Movie Pass does.
Yeah, there goes our Movie Pass sponsorship.
Yeah. They don't have the money to keep us anymore. Yeah. The $3.50 they've been paying us a month.
Yeah, we are an expensive advertiser.
Yeah. All right, well, catch you next week, viewing anglers.